Wholesalers, welcome to another episode of Wholesaler Masterminds Radio. Wholesalers, I'm going out of the box on this one, and I'm so happy to go out of the box on this one. If you're a reader of WholesalerMasterminds.com, if you've read Brotherhood of the Bag, if you're a recipient of the Sunday night email, you know I'm trying to offer you insights and help you with your practice in untraditional and non-conventional ways. There's lots of folks that can bring you the data and information in the most conservative fashion. I want to bring you stuff that's outside of the box and help you learn, which is why I'm beyond delighted to offer you today's guest. I'm going to start at the bottom of his bio because I love the last sentence of it. You want to know what our guest is probably doing when he gets off this call? He's going to be making some gadget ooze, bubble, fizz, bounce, smoke, or maybe he's creating an idea to get another human to be turned on to life's small wonders. Steve Spangler got his credentials as a science author, teacher, professional speaker, toy designer, Emmy Award-winning television personality. His books have taught people how to launch potatoes, whip up the perfect batch of slime, turn ordinary bottle of soda into erupting geyser fun, which wholesalers, this is the guy. This is the guy that started that whole phenomenon of drop a Mentos in a bottle of soda and watch what happens. If you haven't done it, be quite careful. You may know him best for his appearances frequently on The Ellen Show, Steve Spangler. Welcome to Wholesaler Masterminds Radio.
Wow. Now, that is an introduction. I wish I would have written that. And maybe I'll have to listen to the podcast again because I'll have to take notes on that. None of that's true, but I think that that was a really awesome introduction. So that was...
We're really jazzed that you're here, and we thank you for joining us.
So thank you.
Oh, yeah. So what we're going to do today, wholesalers, I want to use Steve and the work that he does and the brand that he has built and his creative mind to help us stimulate some of those creative juices that for so many wholesalers, they say don't exist, but I don't believe it. It's a muscle that hasn't been leveraged and exercised. It's lying dormant. Now, I want to, and I just want to reference a starting point for our conversation, Steve. Harvard Business Report had a study or an article that referenced a study about the curiosity quotient. Wholesalers, the curiosity quotient. You've heard us talk about the memorability quotient. You've heard about intellectual quotient, IQ. You've heard about emotional quotient, EQ. This is the curiosity quotient. How hungry is your mind? How curious are you? And I can't think of anybody that's more curious than Steve. Steve, how are you going about this process of cultivating, of leveraging, of extracting this creativity that you bring so wildly to the process of learning and science, which can be a really dull subject if you let it?
Well, I have to go backwards and make sure that, and we really will come full circle. So when I tell you the story of my wife being in the financial services business, doing the lunches, going in and trying to offer the pieces, and the products, the services, we really will come full circle. While she was doing that, early on in marriage, 25 years ago, I was struggling to be a science teacher. And if you can imagine, when people look at you and go, so what are you doing? You say, I teach science. Many times you get this reaction, this visceral response. It's like, oh my God, I hated science when I was a kid. Every once in a while you get somebody who goes, I love science, but isn't it funny how people are willing to share that experience with you? Especially when they go, oh, I hated science as a kid. It took me a while to understand they didn't hate science. They just hated the experience, or they had displeasure with the experience. Now, if you want to, I didn't know this 25 years ago, but this really is an application of the law of effect. And so if our listeners aren't familiar with the law of effect, look it up online. But it really is this concept that dates back to the early 1900s that says that a response that produces a satisfying effect in a particular situation is likely to occur again. So if you're in a situation that is pleasing, then whatever was going on in that pleasing situation is probably going to happen again. And the contrary is, if you were involved in something that was not in a great environment, that caused some sort of discomfort, mental or otherwise, then it's probably not going to happen again. And so this is happening with people all the time. And somebody looks at you and says, I didn't like science as a kid. What they're really saying is, I just didn't have a good experience. But if I would have wrapped that around, not the content, I don't care, I'm still learning chemistry, I'm still doing the periodic table, but if that environment was fun and pleasing, now all of a sudden my mind is open to that suggestion or that particular idea. So I have to go back and take a look at it. Did I want to be the science teacher who was, open the book, we've got 14 things we've got to cover today, here are the three equations, or did I want to be that guy that started with blowing something up, all the kids, all of a sudden the kids are looking at me like, what is this guy all about? All of a sudden there's an engaging demonstration, a question, a time for them to ponder and think about the question and to weave that into the content that I knew I had to cover, but I created a pleasing environment. Does that make sense?
Oh, it makes complete sense. Wholesalers, I want you to think for a minute. As Steve is talking, I want you to think about the group meetings you're doing, the one-on-one meetings that you're doing, the public seminars that you're doing. I want you to picture yourself standing in front of those audiences, audience of one or audience of many, and think about the application of this insight, this law of effect. As Steve's telling us more about it, please continue, Steve.
You're really, really good at being able to wrap this up. I really appreciate that.
Sure,
because every once in a while I will go and you think about it, and this is part of the problem of trying to go at this alone or to have a great team, because you can have these wonderful ideas, but you have to have somebody kind of pull them all back together again. And so thanks for working with me as a team as we're doing this. So I can sit there and say, all right, so today we're learning about nucleation points. These are imperfect, and all of a sudden your eyes start to glaze over. Or I can take a group of students out, or possibly just while they're sitting there as a surprise, drop Mentos into a Diet Coke, cause this giant eruption that takes place, and once I've grabbed their attention, now they're all asking, how did that work, and can you do it again? Those are great questions, because how did that work allows an opening for me to say, did you know that there's tiny little imperfections on the outside of a Mento? And those imperfections are where the bubbles of carbon dioxide that are dissolved in the soda hook onto. And if you can position those correctly at the bottom of the bottle, that means making them heavy enough, all of a sudden you get this giant eruption. If you can follow that formula, can you make it bigger? What would change that? Now all of a sudden, you see, in my business, I'm getting people to think. And it's not just kids. I had to do the same thing and take this idea and transfer it over to adults. Because when an adult looked at me and said, oh, I didn't like science as a kid, we've already covered the fact that what he experienced. But when you find an adult who says, oh, I love science as a kid, that's where you dig in your pocket, find another $10, buy them a drink, put them in the corner, pump them for every piece of information they've got. They will never, ever, ever say, the reason that I liked science as a kid is because of this worksheet that we did in fourth grade. They never say that. And I'll go, that worksheet changed my life. But many times, teachers, this is our mode of operation. We give them content. We give them a worksheet. That's the way we've done it for 150 years. That's the way we'll continue to do it. Nobody says that. What they will say is, this lady was out of her mind. I'll never forget it. She was standing on the table. She kicked the eggs. Somebody went to the hospital, but the eggs went into the glass. It's that kind of thing where they're explaining an experience. They're not explaining the tactical procedure that they went through to get the information.
So let's talk,
make sense?
It does. Let's talk a little bit about the creative process. I want to take a moment, you know, speaking of science, I want to get inside the mind of Steve Spangler for a moment, because, you know, wholesalers, if you've seen any of the work that Steve does, or if you go seek him out now, and of course links will be on the website, if you go seek him out now and look at the way in which he engages, this has to start somewhere. This fertile mind of idea has to start somewhere. How does one get the idea to drop a Mentos into a Diet Coke and watch it explode? So how could we draw upon the creativity that you bring to the science, you know, the science of learning and learning science, how do we leverage that? How do we tap into that? How are you able to be so creative?
Thank you for all those things, but it boils down to some pretty simple concepts. Number one, chance favors the prepared mind, right? So it was fairly lucky that that situation happened, but yeah, I had been training for dropping something into a soda, and I didn't even know it, and here's what I mean. It sounds silly, but here's what I mean. Everybody knows what happens when you take a can of soda, shake it up, and open it up. Nobody does that because it's practical. Everybody does that because it's funny. It always provokes a response, correct? So you shake up a can, throw it to a kid, they open it up, ah, that's the funniest thing that's ever happened, we do it at a party, whatever it might be. You understand why I'm not invited to parties anymore. So if you know that that thing, that exploding thing, provokes a response, subconsciously, in the back of your mind, you're sitting there going, what else would provoke that kind of response? So if you opened up 10 cans, that would be great. So here I am sitting in a chemistry department at a university here in Colorado, Regis University in Colorado, and there is a bath that we have, and this bath, you're supposed to put things in, and it's an ultrasonic bath. You've seen them before at the jewelry store. Many times you go and you shop for something, and they'll say, take your ring off to your wife, take your ring off, we'll put it in the bath, and it just vibrates. Ultrasonically, it vibrates all the dirt out. Well, lo and behold, if you put a soda in an ultrasonic bath, it shoots up in the air. This is great because, again, it provokes that kind of response. Who thought of that? I have no idea. But somebody passed it down to me a long, long time ago. So when I saw that ultrasonic bath, and I thought, oh, I got to get myself a can of soda. But then I thought, let's get a bottle of soda. So that shoots up. The problem with that is it's plugged into the wall, and Mr. Electricity and Mrs. Water do not mix, and so that's a bad situation, correct? So now you're just looking, so you're constantly looking for the next thing that will do that, that provoke the response. So the creativity came from just consciously and subconsciously looking for something that evoked that kind of response that I got before. And all of that comes from, believe it or not, my training, I was classically trained as a magician. What does that mean? It means that my mom and dad were professional magicians. My dad ran a magic school here in Colorado. He was a very famous IT guy, so a brilliant, brilliant mind. They're both still alive, but dad ran a magic school. And so we had some of the best magicians in the whole country coming by. There's a little guy, I don't know if you know the name, David Copperfield, who was about 22, who came through Denver, and I was about 9 years old, and he wanted help on an act that he was doing nightclub to nightclub. He hadn't made it big yet. So here are people that I was surrounded with, and I was trained as a magician, and a magician spends hundreds and hundreds of hours practicing a coin disappearing in his or her hand just for a response. You don't give me money because I made the coin disappear in my hand. I look at you and go, hey, watch this. Put a coin in your hand, bam, and it's gone. The magician thrives on you going, what? Where did it go? And that's why we devote that much time to making the card pop to the top of the deck or the prediction on the other side of the glass or whatever it might be. So I was conditioned for this response piece. It has been so helpful now in my business in creating toys. I constantly think of, what's the kid going to be doing at the table when mom and dad have him open up the present, and the next thing you know, they've got water, they've got baking soda, they've got some vinegar, this coloring agent. What kind of response will be provoked as a result of the materials that I put in the kit, or what kind of disappointment will be there with the materials I don't put in the kit? But it all starts with me thinking about the customer first.
Let's talk about accessing tough gigs, as I'll call it. So your resume is so impressive, and now, of course, you're, you know, on one of the most popular daytime shows on the planet. How have you been able to break through to become a correspondent for science in the local Denver market, to be able to appear on all major networks, and I know that's a big question, but if you can distill it down, and the reason it has application here, wholesalers, you know, you're trying to get after the corner office guy, you're trying to get after the $5 million a year producer, you're trying to get after the RIA that's managing $5 billion in assets, you know, you're trying to get after your Ellen DeGeneres. I want to know, Steve, are there some things we can learn from how you went about the process of really blowing up your brand, no pun intended, for what you do? How? Tell us how. Give us some tidbits. We're curious.
Let's take it on the smallest level. I started teaching in 1990 because teachers make so much money, we always find another job to get to do in the summertime, and that job sometimes creeps into the rest of the year. I in addition to teaching science, here I was doing science shows. So think of a science guy, before the term science guy was really big, in the early 90s, going school to school, library to library, science museum, doing a show. And it's easy to get the first gig, it's really hard to get the second gig, right? And when I say the second gig, the callback. So if you get called back, the reason that you get called back is because there's a sense of trust. And so I think that part of that was that you were putting enough effort into the first impression when you went out, and you got to see the group for the very first time, and the event planner got to see you the very first time, that there was a sense of trust to say, I got to have him back. I don't even know what he's going to do the next time, but for a client to come to you and say, can you come back and I need to have you speak to this next group, and they don't know what you're going to do. It could be the same group, but they just want you back. I think that that's really important because now as we venture over into television, television can be a very one and done. It's a scary situation. Producers micromanage the first time that you're on because they're scared to death that because they're on the line that you've got to be good. And once we got past that first time on the Ellen Show, where it was micromanaged and I just had to be in a mindset where I knew that I could provide them with what they asked for. I had been doing television for almost 18 years at that point. So that was 2007 for the first time that I was on the Ellen Show. I'd done television 18 years prior to that every single week. So you're just in this routine and you're practicing. So that first time was scary and I had to make sure that I wasn't overconfident, that I allowed them to be in the driver's seat and just deliver the results that they wanted, but to deliver more results than they expected, so that as I'm walking off the stage for that very first time in the Ellen Show, the executive producer comes over to me and says, if you don't do the Jay Leno show, we'll have you back in November. And I felt like turning to him while the music was playing going, I've never been asked to be on the Jay Leno show, but his comment was, you will be in the next 2 weeks. And like clockwork, we were, the phone rang, and I had to respectfully say, thank you, I really appreciate it, but no, I'm working with these people. So there was that sense, again, of trust. When they saw that we didn't show up on the Tonight Show, they knew that they would call, and I came back in November, that was the point where they said, would you be a regular on the show? With every successive time that we were on the show, there's just a greater sense of trust, Because they know that first and foremost, I'm looking out for making sure that, number one, the audience has a great time, and number two, Ellen is always the star. Now, it has business connotations as well, because I think we do the same thing. Many times we get so caught up in how great our product is, how great the service is, just do this, that we sometimes, and I do the same thing, sometimes I fail to stop, look at what the customer's reaction is going to be, and think about that person who's the in-between piece, right, the buyer who is there. How can I make that buyer look as good as possible? My job is not to be funnier than Ellen, and I may have a really funny line, but my job is to set it up so that she gets to be funny. And she is naturally much, much funnier than I am. But I, even with those times where you go, I think I could hit a home run here, my job is to set it up, make her look great, because if I make her look great, in turn, she will make me look great.
God, Steve, there's so many applications of what you're talking about. Wholesalers, Steve talked about the first impression, the ability to go in and deliver on what the client asked for, buy the book, not push back, do what the client advises in the hopes of building the trust that will allow you to be invited back. Does that sound familiar, wholesalers? If you're the wholesaler that pushes back and says, no, 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 we'll do it my way or the highway, you're not coming back. And then he talked about this notion of the doing what you say you're going to do when you say you're going to do it. Have you heard that before from us wholesalers? Of course you have, like all the time. And in this case, it was turning down the Tonight Show. Can we say that again, please? You told Jay Leno, nah, I'm going to go do Ellen more repeatedly. I'm not going to work with you. That takes some stones. Thank you very much. And then you made your advisor. You made Ellen the star. You were willing to take a back seat, we'll just put that in quotes for a moment, take a back seat to what you thought might be a better chance to shine by making the star look starrier. And wholesale, isn't that what we do? We're here to be able to make advisors look better to their customers. And in that way, we get to look like stars to our firms. Wow. Wow. All of these direct points of correlation, Steve. It's pretty cool.
Thank you. And you're great to, the way that you interpreted it is fantastic. And many times I think we get so caught up in what we're doing that we fail to see these parallels along the way. And that's been helpful. And maybe it's helpful for your listeners to know that I have a toy company. So in the midst of all of this, you don't really make money on television. You make money after you've been on television. It was told to me many, many, many years ago. I really didn't understand it. And while you may make a couple bucks here and there, what you really are doing is trying to leverage this brand. And so what you're trying to do is to create this brand or persona so that when somebody sees it in an element where they could buy a book, buy a toy, go to Target, and they see a line of toys by Steve Spangler, there's a sense of, oh, I know what I'm going to get. I don't even really care what's in the kit. But this is going to be fun, because if he put his name on it, and every time I see him, it's consistent, he is fun, or there's always a surprise, or there's always whatever they have come to enjoy in a consistent way, then they'll buy the product. And so I think that there's a sense of consistency that's so important as well. It's easy to be distracted by bright, shiny objects, and we go and do this. And in my business, I get caught up. I'm an entrepreneur. I'm not a CEO. And so I had to surround myself with people who are really good at the business process and allow me to continue to be an entrepreneur, because I would fail in the day-to-day operations. And one of the things that I had to be taught was to be consistent with my brand. With all these opportunities coming at you, it's easy to go, let's go try this, or let's go do television here, or let's do YouTube over here. And when we said yes to those things, we had to pull the team back together again and say, how can we be consistent? If we take this opportunity, what will this do to further the consistent message that we have been delivering for years and years and years, and will it detract? When I got offered, I can't tell you how many pitches there have been with people from production companies going, we need a science guy, you're going to be in this costume, we need you in a lab coat and a bow tie, you're going to be in a basement, you're going to be coming up with crazy stuff. No, that's not consistent with who I am. You never see me in a lab coat on television. I don't wear a bow tie. Somebody else does that. I'm a different character, and if I ever jump out of that and do something that's not consistent with that, then I lose trust with the brand and trust with the customers that have come to rely on consistency in that brand. Make sense?
Absolutely. Let me put a wrap on this and just a couple of words, wholesalers. One of the last things Steve talked about, among the many great thoughts that were embedded in there, was the notion of his team. And I just want to pull out that little moment, because it's the team that helps him stay focused on what he does best. It's the team that helps him make the navigation of his brand hum. And wholesalers, you need that team too. And we've talked about that in the past, that team of scheduler, admin, meeting planner. Some wholesalers have drivers, internal wholesaler. You need the team, and you'll see more about that as we evidence more of our millionaire wholesaler research. Steve talked about the law of effect, and I want to close with this because it continues to really echo in my mind, which is creating situations that create unforgettable learning experiences. I'm going to challenge you, wholesalers, and ask you, what are you doing to create unforgettable learning experiences? Isn't that what you're doing with your advisor? In a lot of cases, you're teaching them, you're instructing them, you're educating them. And how are you doing it? By unleashing your creative mind versus, as Steve said much earlier, you know, we're going to have a worksheet and then a 10-question quiz, and that's how you'll learn science. Steve, I can't tell you what a pleasure it's been. I'm a huge fan of the work that you do. I enjoy you so much.
Fun.
And what a blast to have you here.
Thank you. I had a blast getting to share some of the things with you. And now I'll go back, listen to the podcast, take notes, and take it back to my team. And my team will go, well, let's do these things. It'll be fantastic. So it'll be very, very fun. You're very, very nice to bring me into a new world, and I'm honored that you would do that.
That's so cool. Wholesalers, come back next time for another episode of Wholesaler Masterminds Radio.